Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 8:01 a.m. and that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 21st. The pound is up testing the 130 area. It hasn't been up around this level since early 2019. At the highest it's been in the interval since the Brexit vote all the way back in 2016 was around 140. What's also interesting is that ahead of the Brexit vote, the pound had been trending down for about 2 years previous to that vote. So there's a lot of an oversold condition to be unwound. If the question about the UK's relationship with the EU and the disruption that was threatened becomes less of an issue and the uncertainty is removed, then there's significant scope for the pound to unwind more than it already has of the decline it posted from the high in 2014. The UK government said over the weekend that they have enough votes to pass the deal. Now, we're going to be arguing for a substantial period of time whether it is a good deal or a bad deal, how much money has in fact been agreed to be spent, and what exactly has been agreed to, and the strategies that were followed in order to achieve it. And all of those are very valid questions, but the reality is that if a deal is agreed to, and it is in large part what Theresa May agreed to, it is membership in all but name, well, that is not especially disruptive for companies, and it is companies make up the stock market. Well, when we look at stay for a moment and look at the pound, then it has been rallying against the euro. It is up now to 116.5. The highest it's been over the course of this evolving base formation has been just north of 117. This has been a very swift rebound from the failed break below 110, and the big question now is, are we going to get the deal passed? It is going to require that kind of catalyst to really reignite bullish interest in the pound. But one of the more attractive points about the UK has been that it has a positive yield. And if the safe haven demand for gilts is going to ebb away, then this does suggest that the 50 basis point level is going to continue to hold. It did hold in 2016, and it suggests that we're going to see higher yields. And I do think that that is a common factor to a significant number of markets. Bond yields are suggesting that there is less haven demand, and that's rather interesting considering that investors are still reticent to think that stock markets are capable of breaking on the upside. Well, when, for example, we look at the FTSE, it's been ranging mostly above the 7,000 level now for about 3 years. And the strength of the pound is not especially good news for those large cap shares. But when we look at the FTSE 250, which is very much more domestically oriented, then it has broken up and out of this range that has been in evidence now for 6 months. It's confirmed support in the region of the trend mean. This has not been the most consistent of trends over the course of the last decade. There have been significant periods of volatility. The defining characteristic following each one of these periods of volatility has been a rebound that has subsequently pushed on to make a new high. That's the defining characteristic of a buy the dips market, and the FTSE 250 remains a buy the dips market. It's certainly given a number of attractive investment opportunities over the course of the last decade, and now it is rebounding once more. That's obviously on the back of more or better sentiment towards a deal with the EU being reached. The DAX index was among the better performers in here today. It was up 1%. And just on the daily chart, it's quite clear that that is pushing up and out of what is effectively a 6-month range. It is confirming support around this 12,000 level. If we then zoom in and look more at their mid caps, again, we are seeing a very similar pattern. This has also been a buy the dips market, and it is firming from the 25,000 level. So that is more encouraging. When we think about the French market, it has been one of the few in the region that is in fact testing its peaks. So it has been consolidating over the course of the last few weeks, but this is one index that is really very close to the peak put in all the way back in 2007. And considering that it has been ranging more or less below 5,500 since the middle of 2017, I think we can conclude that there is plenty of trading underneath it for a move on to new highs if sentiment towards the potential for additional upside from global markets does continue to improve. Now, when we think about what's going on in Japan, it had a rip-roaring advance last week, and that has pushed it on to break its downtrend evident over the course of the last year. Well, that's perhaps the most important technical action we've had from the Nikkei in a really quite long time, considering that it has been going sideways around mostly above 20,000 for more than 2 years. The fact that it has now been able to break that downward bias is important. Now, when we think about what's going on in terms of the yen and the continued demand for it as a safe haven, well, it has been weakening over the course of the last 2 months. It's not quite yet been able to break the downward bias by the dollar, or the dollar's bias hasn't been broken, but it does look increasingly likely that that is a realistic potential outcome. When we think about the one of the additional reasons that Europe is doing better, it's because the dollar has been weaker over the course of the last couple of weeks. Now, the dollar is right in the region of the trend mean, so this is about where we could anticipate some support starting to come back in. It's going to have to bounce here if the progression of higher reaction lows and the scope here for additional upside is to be continued to give the benefit of the doubt. 100 has been an area of psychological resistance for the dollar index over the course of the last 5 years. It's still a bit of a psychological Rubicon, and it's really going to require a clear and sustained move above that level in order to really confirm that we're back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. Now, when we think about the Asia dollar index, obviously that is heavily weighted by the renminbi, and the dollar is still doing reasonably well in here. This is a downtrend overall for the Asian currencies. Asian currencies have steadied somewhat over the course of the last 6 weeks, and they do appear to be unwinding a short-term oversold condition relative to the trend mean, but that's obviously something that is going to have to give us more evidence of a return to demand dominance to confirm that we're starting to see the demand for dollars ebb away. One of the I think the more important characteristics is that the Federal Reserve is back in a quantitative easing environment. They've added in approximately $200 billion to the repo facility, and they don't call that quantitative easing. Of course, what it is a direct response to the fact that the prop trading desks of the major investment banks are just not providing the liquidity that they used to. They're tapped out, and they've been significantly reduced in size and importance as a result of the Volcker Rule. The banks themselves have to hold a lot more Tier 1 capital, and of course, that Tier 1 capital has been defined as treasuries. So they just don't have the the wherewithal to commit the kind of capital to the repo market that they would have ahead of the financial crisis. That means that the Fed is front and center in terms of providing liquidity for just about all areas of the financial markets today. Of course, what it means is that there is going to be more dollars. The clearest factors in the support for the US dollar over the course of the last 4 or 5 years has been the fact that the Federal Reserve was both raising interest rates and reducing the quantity of dollars in circulation. Well, now that is changing, and that is one of the factors that has been very clearly behind the strength of the dollar. Therefore, we have to start to think about the potential that we're going to get some weakness in the dollar. Well, if we get a weak dollar, then that should be good for emerging markets and it should be good for commodities. But the continuous commodity index has not been able to push up and through the 400 point level in here today. It needs to do that in order to break the downtrend and confirm that we're back at a demand-dominated environment. One of the reasons that it's not doing that is because the Chinese are positioning themselves for growth that is coming in below 6%. They're looking at an inflation rate of at least a stated inflation rate of about 3%. Well, it wouldn't take very much of a growth shock to create a negative growth environment or real growth environment in China. And that's obviously an argument that is sapping the industrial resources sector of some interest. I think what's also really worth pointing out is that the dollar has been weakening and gold prices have been holding reasonably steady in dollar terms. But it is the less demand for safe havens that is perhaps more of a headwind to the gold price in the near term. It still has a reasonably wide overextension following that really impressive advance we saw in the middle of the year. And there is the scope that we may see some additional consolidation. The next really impressive buying opportunity is likely to be when it has unwound that overextension relative to the trend mean. We're just not there quite yet. Silver prices had pulled back much more aggressively. And they're in positive territory in here today, continuing to hold this $17 area. Most of the overextension has been unwound in here. The more important point, of course, is that the precious metals have completed lengthy base formations, and that suggests there is a new bull market. One of the clearest arguments for why precious metals should be doing better, despite the near-term risk of some consolidation, is that we are increasingly moving towards negative real interest rate environment. Then there is the additional potential that the answer from governments and central banks is to print more currency and devalue the stock of fiat currencies in the world. And that should improve the chances for just about anything that can't be printed into existence. Certainly, gold and silver are not only part of that category, but they are liquid markets and easily tradable. Property, on the other hand, is not as liquid, but it should do reasonably well in that kind of environment. When we look at, for example, some of the UK's property companies, then they rallied really very impressively in the last couple of weeks to break their downtrends, but also in direct response to this change that we're getting in the UK. Persimmon, for example, has a yield in the region of 9.8% today. And that is obviously also in a direct response to what we're seeing in terms of the UK's evolving situation. Now, when we think about the S&P 500, this range that's been underway now for the last 6 months, excuse me, continues to look like a bullish consolidation. The most important thing it has done has been to put in that upside weekly key reversal back in May. There has been a lengthy hiatus. There is a sequence of higher reaction lows. It is finding support in the region of the trend mean, and it is not going to require an awful lot to see this market breaking on the upside. We also, on the other hand, know where the stops are. They're generally below the most recent low, that people do get antsy and bored during periods of ranging, and they do start to put in stops because they don't want to give up any of the gains that they've achieved so far. So the market does have to push on the upside. The compression that we're seeing in trading, where the 3000 level has been resistance but the trend mean continues to rise, well, what that does suggest is when the breakout, when it does come, is going to be really rather powerful. And when we think about what's going on in terms of the NASDAQ, then it is within striking distance of breaking on the upside as well. And the Dow Jones, despite the weakness that we're getting from Boeing, is also right in the region of the upper side of its range. I think when we think about the domestic US economy, it's the outlook for the Russell 2000 is what people will be looking at. When we compare this performance to what we've seen from the other mid-cap sectors in Europe, then it does have some work to do. It needs to push back above that 1600 point level in order to clearly confirm we're back in a demand-dominated environment, and it hasn't quite been able to do that yet. And the S&P 500 banks is breaking on the upside, and that is a positive. In a liquidity-rich environment, banks should be doing better, and it is looking increasingly likely that they will be doing so. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.